o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. Mace and Mike. Now, at the top of the show, we do our top three stories, and we talked about the big twofer that has to do with Boeing. There were a bunch of layoffs, and also they are going to be restarting 737 MAX production in Everett. And so we decided to bring in not only an expert, but a friend of the show. He's been on a few times. He is an aerospace and manufacturing reporter for the Puget Sound Business Journal. Andrew McIntosh, thanks for coming on Cairo Nights.
Always a pleasure.
Andrew, so we have two big Boeing stories out today, but they're kind of iterations of the same thing. Boeing is cutting a whole bunch of jobs and restarting the 737 MAX line. Which one do you want to tackle first?
Well, let's start with the pink slips.
All right.
That was an announcement that was expected after CEO David Calhoun said they were going to cut 10% of the jobs at the company, so a total of 16,100. And kind of everyone went back to sleep over the last month, and bang, over the long weekend, 400 people got told they're gone up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, where Boeing in Canada has a facility. Boom, another 230 were let go down in Australia at another Boeing facility. And so I started thinking, this is going to be the week. You know, nobody knew exactly when the layoffs would come. And so I started calling around yesterday, and we ran a story yesterday saying it was going to be Friday. But so did the Wall Street Journal. And then I guess Boeing decided they weren't going to let their people just sort of shift in the wind for 3 days. They announced it today. So altogether, it's 10,000 workers that are leaving Boeing in Washington State alone over the next few weeks and before July 31st. That includes people taking the buyouts who applied for and received permission to take it, and approximately 6,700 people who are being cut involuntarily as a result of a number of things, but primarily the global pandemic. And Boeing's business was already starting to tick down before the pandemic, and this just has really, like every other airplane manufacturer in the world, has really put literally a chunk of a fuselage in their wheels. I mean, it's just horrible. The production rates at Airbus and Boeing and Embraer are being cut, and other companies as well. So it's sort of a worldwide thing. Boeing is not escaping, and in fact, the whole problem with the MAX has just kind of made it worse for them. So
when we're talking about these sort of layoffs, I mean, can we break it down by how many people say working on the 737 project in Everett versus the 737 project in Renton? Do we know that sort of breakdown yet or not?
No, Boeing is very unwilling to share that kind of detail. They'll share it geographically for the five big states where they have workers. So they did that today, and that's how I got that 10,000 figure for Washington State. I asked about Oregon. We have a sister newspaper in Portland, and they would not provide those numbers to me, other than to say that Boeing's two facilities in Oregon, which may, you know, you may have some listeners down in the south end of the state that listen to you, they've been hit as well by layoffs there. And it's kind of weird. And on the defense side, you know, Boeing's, the government's throwing contracts at Boeing to keep it going. Missiles, you know, they haven't made since the financial crisis. There was a $3.9 billion contract, and fighters and other equipment, tankers. And so, the government is doing what they can to keep Boeing alive and well as part of the military industrial complex, as they call it. But we don't have the details.
When we talk about these layoffs, then, what sort of people are being let go? Does that give any indication? In other words, are these, you know, SPIA engineers, you know, working on the floor? Is it a specific particular class of worker, or is it across the full spectrum?
It's across the board, and it's been the biggest number of layoffs. Unfortunates, we'll call them, are people inside the Boeing commercial airplanes division of Boeing, which is its biggest and therefore is going to bear the brunt. But it is bearing a disproportionate brunt of the cuts compared to other divisions of the company like defense for the reasons we all know, which is that airlines all over the world have parked thousands of jets and aren't using them regularly and therefore wearing down parts, which Boeing also makes to keep them flying. So you have Boeing has basically that has three divisions, the airplanes division, its services division, global services, which makes parts and software for airplanes, and then the defense side. So the defense side is doing fine with space, satellites, missiles, and all that stuff. Global services is getting cuts. That's based in Dallas, but has thousands of people working here in Seattle. And that's because nobody's needing those parts and doing that maintenance and all those various things. So they've had some cuts down there as well.
Do you expect there to be any more layoffs in the future?
This is just the first round. They've only hit altogether with the foreign layoffs and the domestic U.S. ones, about 12,000. So there's still another 4,000 to come. And CEO David Calhoun warned there will be more over the coming weeks as they work to hit that number. So that's not good for people. And getting back to your question about do we know anything about who is getting hit, we do know from what Calhoun said that Boeing corporate office workers and other people it's sort of in the sales and marketing side. If you're not selling any airplanes, you don't need a whole lot of salespeople. So they're supposed to be getting hit, whereas they're trying to preserve the skilled labor production people. But it is clear that engineers have been hit, the IAM, the machinists, their members in the union have been hit. So it's a little bit of everybody because you'll remember just a few months ago, the aerospace world was suffering from a massive talent shortage. People were fighting for workers and throwing money at them like drunken sailors to just have the people in the building to make the parts that you needed to deliver your product to airline customers and stuff. And now it's just like flipped on its head. It's completely crazy.
We're talking with Andrew McIntosh from the Puget Sound Business Journal. Andrew, is this type of work, the advanced machinists and the builders of these airplanes, is this the kind of job that you have to sort of keep doing to keep your muscles in shape, for lack of a better term? Are these layoffs or these gaps in work going to affect, let's say, the individual in the future?
Well, it's really weird. I did a story a week ago or so ago about as Boeing is laying off, other companies are hiring. NASA is sloshing money around with big contracts for rockets and satellite machinery, and a company with a big plant over in Redmond called Aerojet Rocketdyne is actually hiring. They're out there taking advantage of this lull in and layoff time and among some of the aerospace suppliers. They're going out there shopping for talent and picking up dozens of people to help boost their activities going forward. So there are jobs for people who are being let go, and like any industry that involves technical stuff, you need to maintain your skills to a certain level to be able to perform in that industry. But Boeing has a long and good partnership with its unions that under which they will provide retraining and employment assistance to people to help them to retrain and get skilled up if they were lacking skills that exposed them to a layoff, so that these downturns in aerospace are not forever. They come and go, and they may last 12 months or 18 months or 24 months even, but after that usually things really jumpstart out of the gate, and hopefully that will happen when we in the world get a vaccine or 10 to put out these fires that we are suffering from.
Andrew, so this is kind of an odd dual announcement, because also Boeing has announced that it's resuming production on the 737 MAX line. I guess the first question, aside from announcing the resumption of production after you're laying off workers, but the first question is, where is Boeing and the FAA right now in approval to even let this thing fly?
Well, that's my my second story of the day, which is that they feel, and forgive us if we've heard this before, all of us, they feel that they're close enough to winning the regulatory approvals required from the FAA to return the plane to service, that they also announced today that they are restarting one of the three assembly lines of the huge Renton manufacturing plant for the MAX. So it'll be a slow rate at first, but they'll be ordering parts from suppliers, and the suppliers in town I talked to this afternoon are ecstatic. It, as one said, going from no business to some business at this particular time in the economic cycle is just, you know, anything we can cling to is great news right now. So, yeah, that is good news. Some people are kind of wondering, like, it was very odd to have these two announcements on the same day, you know, handing out 6,700 layoff notices to people around town, and later in the day you're restarting the MAX plant. Could you maybe have waited tomorrow for the MAX plant or whatever? But some of the analysts I talked to said it seemed like an odd thing to do. Not to be forgotten is Boeing has 400 737 MAX airplanes parked all over Puget Sound at Moses Lake and in Salt Lake City, waiting to be upgraded. And for those of you who are not regular readers, I kind of laid out in a very specific and concrete way in last week's paper exactly how Boeing is going to proceed with that the restart of the factory, while also getting everybody's airplanes that were grounded back into service for the airlines, the ones that have already been delivered, then upgrade and deliver the ones that are sitting in storage to the airlines that are still around to receive them, because a number of those airplanes were ordered by airlines that have gone into receivership or bankruptcy and don't exist anymore. So it's a very big challenge that Boeing is going to have with the MAX going forward, but they seem to have some good plans, and they seem to have some good people and a new team in place. And so, you know, bully to them if they can pull it off, right? I think a lot of workers have started, I reported this afternoon, have started going back to Renton. You'll remember when they halted production in Renton, they started sending workers over to the other Boeing airplane programs to give them a hand on the 767 tanker, on the 777 wide-body jet, the Dreamliner, and others, so that they could assist with those programs. But now those workers have started to go back to Renton over the last couple of weeks. So they seem to be serious about this. And the FAA has said, the director of the FAA has said he won't let the MAX fly passengers again unless he feels good about putting his own family in it. So that's a pretty high bar. And anyone who knows Stan Deal, who's the president and CEO of Boeing Airplanes, knows he's a real deal for what some people say. And if anybody can do it, he's the guy.
How about quality control issues? That was an issue that came up. There was a story about screws in a fuel tank, and they had to go back and look at all those newly built but still parked 737 MAXs.
They call it in the aviation industry, they call it FOD, F-O-D, foreign object debris.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be, every plane's supposed to be sort of gone over with a fine-tooth comb to find stuff that's left behind by people, as humans inevitably do. And so they claim they've set up new procedures to be able to inspect the planes more thoroughly. Some of those planes are going to have to be each and every one of those planes that has been parked for the last little while will be gone over by an FAA inspector even before they are handed over to the airline. So that's going to be part of the challenge that Boeing faces as it ramps up to deliver all those planes, is that They have a guy from the FAA who's going to be there the whole time they're preparing the airplane for delivery. And so there can't be anything out of line because the FAA knows if another MAX goes down, God help them. It will just be a nightmare for everybody.
Andrew, we're hearing from our sources well deep inside the Puget Sound Business Journal newsroom that you folks have a big project rolling out this Friday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can. We have marshaled the resources of the individual newsrooms across the company to sit down and literally go steady with small businesses in our region from various corners of the economy and basically go steady with them for the last couple of months as they've circumnavigated the pandemic, the challenges, the pains, the joys, the failures, how they're coping to survive, what they've done. And we're going to tell those very compelling stories in a special edition of the paper here and in our markets across the country, Portland as well, for people who might be listening, and just to sort of record for history and posterity what the hell people have lived through over the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And it's I've been reading the pages today that are being prepared, and they are something. The stories are compelling. The photography and design of the paper is just stunning. Our designer, Sean Martin at the Business Journal, has done just a fabulous job. I think readers would find the stories both inspiring they might find some lessons themselves that they could use to help their own businesses if they're experiencing the challenges that we all are right now.
Now, you know, I'm always looking for a sclusy. Is there any tease? Is there any story that in particular stuck out to you that you're looking forward to people reading about?
Well, I will tell you that the one that I wrote for the package is about a small Boeing supplier and owned by a family in Mukilteo, and they have been double sucker punched this year. They got hit by the MAX crisis and the factory shutdown. They did a lot of work for Boeing and the MAX. They make tools and things for airplane builders. And then one day they got a call from Boeing saying, "Hey, has your delivery guy been over here this week?" And they went, "Yeah, he just dropped off some stuff." And it was like, "Oh, we just had some COVID in the plant. And so your guy may have been potentially infected." And this particular company has a very older, skilled workforce, guys with underlying health conditions. So you can imagine the nightmare that ensued. And if people want to read the rest of that very compelling story, they could pick up the paper or check us out online. And it is... just interesting because you think of aerospace, you think of all guys. You know, it's a very guy kind of business. Executives are guys. And this particular company is run by two sisters.
Oh, wow.
Who picked it up after their father passed away.
Yeah.
And just the things they did to stay open and alive and what they are now facing going forward, it makes for very compelling journalism. And, you know, I'm not a guy who cries very often, but today I shed a tear when I read the result of 2 months of work piled into one story with the photos. It was wow. It was just a difficult time for them and for many people. We've all cried. I know it.
That, of course, is the Puget Sound Business Journal we're talking about. Check that out. That happens on Friday. Andrew McIntosh, thank you so much for talking to us on Cairo Nights tonight.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Always.
And we'll be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike, hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday. 9897.3 is the State Roofing text line. If you want to be a part of the conversation, that's a great way to reach out to us during the show. Mike, I'm very excited to talk to our next guest here. We all know that the West Seattle Bridge is closed. It has been closed since March 23rd. And what are we going to do about it? Seems to be the big question. And so now there is a citizen task force that has been assembled. It is co-chaired by Paulina Lopez. She's a Duwamish River community advocate and former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nichols. And they are going to sort of contribute some ideas, listen to some ideas, and figure out how we can solve the traffic mess that is going to be happening now that this bridge is going to be closed and probably need to be replaced. And so joining us now on Cairo Nights is former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nichols. Thanks for talking to us.
You bet. Good evening.
Mayor Nichols, this is still a question on about whether or not the bridge can be rehabbed and eke some time out of it while a long-term plan is put in place, or a question of whether or not just bite the bullet now, tear it down, and start on something new. Is the community task force going to be dealing with any of those issues, or just primarily how do we manage in West Seattle without our major arterial to downtown Seattle?
No, we will be advising the mayor on a range of issues, including whether we think that repair of the current bridge makes sense from a cost-benefit analysis, or whether we should go immediately to a permanent replacement for it. We're going to try and figure out how to mitigate the impact on people who relied on the bridge and on the neighborhoods in the South Duwamish area who are impacted by the new traffic that's going through their neighborhoods. So we're going to look at that piece, and then we're going to take a look at what should a replacement look like, whether it's done now or in a few years when a repaired bridge would hit the end of its useful life, which is no more than 10 years.
If you had to, when you first saw this and saw it all playing out, not to presume what the community task force is going to come up with, but, I mean, on the natural, at least from my point of view, it seemed like why not just devote yourselves to replacing it, because that it's just such a short lifespan when it gets fixed, and it's going to take a while to fix anyway. Does it in any way speed it along if you move directly to a new bridge, or am I misunderstanding the situation?
No, you are expressing the questions that we're going to try and answer through this process. How difficult would the repair be? How expensive would it be? How reliable would it be versus going directly to either a full replacement, or if there are parts of the bridge that are still good, a partial replacement, looking at a 75-year life. So those are unanswered questions, and we're going to be working very, very hard to try and find those answers, share them with the public, and then give our best advice to the mayor on how to proceed.
I know there's been discussion for a long time and about light rail and getting light rail to West Seattle to connect that. Is there any talk, any consideration about maybe incorporating that into a new bridge plan?
Yes, that'll be one of the things that we look at, whether that makes sense, if it saves a significant amount of money and potentially time, then that's something we'll look very, very closely at. On the other hand, one of the things, lessons perhaps we've learned here, is redundancy. If we had, for instance, kept the old four-lane West Seattle Bridge that was still working even after the ship hit the other one, we would have four lanes coming in and out instead of the two-lane swing bridge that replaced it. Redundancy in a transportation system is a benefit, and we'll need to weigh the potential cost savings along with the potential benefit of the of redundancy. If light rail went out, we'd still have the vehicle bridge. If the vehicle bridge went out, we'd still have the light rail. That kind of a question.
What about the ancillary traffic movement ideas? Are you specifically going to stay with the bridge and focus tightly on that, or are you folks also going to have discussions about expanded water taxis or rerouted ferries, change to surface street configuration, all of those other things that are going to be the immediate short-term solutions or fixes, partial fixes to the situation?
Sure. We will look at, certainly we're going to look at water taxi and buses and bicycles as mitigation in the short term. But we're also going to take a look at what those provide in the long term. People are changing. I think more people are going to be working at home. Now the companies are comfortable that they can get productivity from that. I think that people are going to be open to other ways of moving about. They're going to have to be in the short term. And I think that that could be part of a long-term answer as well. So, no, we'll be taking a look at I think it will be a bridge. I know there's some conversation about potentially a tube tunnel under the river. We'll take a look at that. But I think we will need capacity across the Duwamish in one way or another. And that capacity will need to take into account transit, bicycles, waterborne transit, and freight as well. So there's going to be a lot of work involved in this, and we're going to try and have the best advice we can come up with for the mayor short-term and long-term.
This task force, Mayor Nichols, outside of you and Ms. Lopez, there are 19 other members of this group. Who are they, and what interests are they representing?
Well, this is a group that the mayor has assembled. They are neighborhood activists and representatives. They're business business owners and operators, and they are the elected officials who are involved either in this area as district representatives, or in the case of the port, one of the commissioners from the port, as they have two major facilities along this route.
Mayor Nichols, last question. When do you expect to sort of start meeting and start getting your ideas coalesced? And do you have a deadline on when you're supposed to at least provide some initial recommendations to the mayor's office?
You know, I think it's going to be more of an iterative process. There are numerous questions that need to be answered, and they're on different time frames.
Right.
So the question of whether it's going to be repaired or replaced is one that's going to come up pretty quickly. I would anticipate that happening late June, early July. The question of what long-term solution, that's going to take a little more time. If the repair is not feasible, then it'll be on a shorter time frame. If the repair is feasible, we have the luxury of a little bit more time. So we're asking the members of the subcommittee to be prepared to be at this work for the next year. It might take more than that. I kind of doubt it's going to take less than that.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nichols. Mayor Nichols, thanks so much for talking to us on Cairo Nights.
Thank you, Mayor Nichols.
You bet. My pleasure. Take care.
And we'll be back with more Cairo Nights right after this.
I believe we can reach the morning light.
Feel that beat, everybody. The rhythm of Cairo Nights. You take all the songs and just change them. Can insert words, that's how we do. We creative types. Mason, Mike, everyone hanging out with you on a Soft Rock Wednesday. Frank Shires is in here with us, of course. DB, of course, because it's time to spin the old wheel segments. Give her a little shove, and around and around and around she goes. And what she lands on is question of the day. It didn't rhyme, but I'm fine with that. 989-973 is the State Roofing text line. If you want to chime in, would love to hear from you guys on this question of the day. What is something that you gave up that you haven't missed? I know lots of times we make decisions in our life to cut out something or another, and we think, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold this up long term or do this, or what am I losing by giving this thing up? And then turns out, yeah, it's not really that big a deal. Don't miss it at all. Mike Lewis.
Everybody's quiet.
Yeah.
This is actually kind of a hard one. I've been trying to rack my brain for what I mean, the problem for me is if I've given it up and I didn't care, then I forgot about it. And so I can't really come up. Give me a minute. Mm-hmm. I'll pass
sure.
for now and I'll come back.
Sure,
to
sure.
Frank Church.
Sir? Church.
And I feel embarrassed about this because it's a very personal decision.
Yep.
But yeah, church. Sunday church services. I grew up in the Lutheran church, Our Savior's Lutheran in Bremerton. I went a lot.
Yeah.
All the way through into my young adult years. There was a point at which, a long time ago now, I was done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to church anymore on Sunday.
Yeah. My mom did that.
Did she?
I mean, I did eventually too, but yeah, I remember. It's an odd story. I don't think we have time for it, but it's a pretty nuts story.
Yeah, I wish I could point at something and say it's their fault.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
It's me. I just was done.
Something you came to.
Yeah.
206 says smoking.
Oh, good.
207, candy. 253, drugs. Yeah, congrats on that.
Yeah.
That's good. How about you, DB?
Yeah, this is hard because I rarely give up something for good just because I have very little, conviction
yeah.
with things.
Self-control.
But I will say, I don't want to say necessarily too much, but toxic people, especially I'm thinking of one friend in particular or a former friend who treated me and my girlfriend really, really poorly. We were roommates with him. And it was hard to separate from him because I'd known him for, 15 years of my life. He had been my friend. I'd went to school with him, all of this. And, but at the end of the day, I just cut him out of my life because he was very volatile, toxic person.
Yeah.
And I was done with it. And my girlfriend was done with it. And we, have not looked back, and I am very, very happy that I no longer am in contact with him.
That's a good move. And that's good, good advice for anyone. If there are toxic people in your life, some you reach out to and you try and do what you can, but others don't want any help. Others don't want to change. And if that's the case, then, you can't do anything about it. 253, eating anything with animals in it.
Oh
yeah. I've often thought about, I try and do
animal
like
crackers.
Do animal crackers count? What about vitamins? Flintstone vitamins. The Dino. Do you still eat the Dino Flintstone vitamin? I think about that a lot. I'm not like a give it up entirely kind of guy, but I have tried to like ratchet back my meat consumption, and it's been great. I don't miss having like beef every single day, which is how I used to eat. Did you settle on anything, Mike?
Well, I thought Frank had an excellent idea because I forgot that I had given up church because it's been so long since I've been to church. It really wasn't something that I ever thought about forgetting or rather giving up. But it was probably it seems like, it raises another interesting point. Like a lot of the things that I have given up without regret, there's many things I've given up with regret, but the things I've given up without regret, I don't know. Sometimes it feels more like a pivot. It's not a conscious effort. When we in my family, we were raised Catholic, when you had the option of not going to church, which came, I think, at about like 15 years old, or 16 years old, maybe something like that. Everyone in my family, I think most went back. I think my sister on and off, but the day it was offered, I said, I'm done. I wasn't done because I had it wasn't a grand protest against church. It was just, for me, I hadn't been getting anything out of it since I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
I always looked around at everyone else and wondering, like, what are they feeling that I'm not feeling?
Right.
And I don't think that it's actually had any corrosive effect on my moral structure or outlook. I think, I'm still the same person I would have been, but not for a moment did I miss it. Not for a heartbeat.
The church thing is interesting because I was so involved.
You were.
For so long.
Yeah.
And really, really, and that it was my whole social circle. I mean, when I came out to Seattle, it was for basically like religious reasons. and everybody I knew was because I knew them from church or this group that I was in or, you know, that kind of thing. Facebook is my answer.
Really? Don't miss it.
A couple years ago, I gave up Facebook because it's the worst. And I was so worried that I wasn't going to be invited to anything anymore, that how was I going to know what's going on in the world? How am I going to keep in touch with people that I really didn't care about keeping in touch with, let's be honest? And I haven't missed it for a day. For a day. You find out who your real friends are because they text you. If they're doing something, they know you're not on the Facebooks, and they shoot you a text. You're like, yeah, all right. I know where I stand. That makes me feel good. 206, being afraid of gaining weight at the expense of having fun. Eat dessert, everybody. It's good for you. You know what I mean? I could sweat it out and try and look like a DB, if you will, a trim young man.
Oh, I eat a lot of dessert.
I know,
let me tell
you.
You
have God's metabolism.
Yeah, you run, what, 25 miles a day on a bad day?
I don't run. Like, not just, I just don't. I never get up to that speed that would be considered a run. There's a brisk jog if I missed a bus or something. That's about as intense as it gets.
Or a lunge.
A lunge, yeah, lunge.
A peppy step.
A peppy step. I have a little pep in my step. Not afraid of that. Coming up, guys, great conversation we're going to have with Stacey Joe about Major League Baseball. We're going to get into what's going on. Are we going to have it? How could we have it? There's negotiations. There's economics of the MLB. It's all coming up next on Cairo Nights. Stay tuned.